It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time. I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And my name is Nico Bakulich.
And let's get biblical.
You got it.
First, we got to cover some ground rules. Number one, stop completely at the stop sign. Do not roll through it. This is a matter of public safety.
My dear, it's called the California stop.
It's called the California roll, like the sushi.
Mm. See, even more argument for my side, which is...
The people feels, need to know.
It feels good, and I want to do it.
Oh. I'm the ex-Christian. I was raised a Presbyterian. I am now an atheist.
And I'm the non-believing sort of Jew. Also, this is not a Christian Bible study podcast.
And it's not for children because we cuss and talk about the things that are in the Bible, which are highly inappropriate for children.
Agreed.
Very excited this week to get back to the standard Bible. I'm reading the New International Version. I have this study Bible with the most ridiculous footnotes, and I'm so excited to talk about them this week.
That's amazing. I'm so happy for you. I read the NRSV, and usually I read the Oxford NRSV, it's an ecumenical Bible. So, I mean, the notes are not like trying to convince me that anything is right or wrong.
Mine are trying really hard. And
how thirsty are the notes in your Bible?
Like, oh my God, we're going to get into it.
Okay.
I made like a list. Okay. Anyway. Today we're talking about the book of Colossians.
How solid are you on that pronunciation? Like, I mean, it looks like Colossians to me.
Colossians?
Yeah.
I mean, I've always heard it Colossians.
Uh-huh.
Like,
in church and stuff?
Oshkosh Bagoshians. Colossians.
Okay. That's not convincing, but...
I don't know. Colossians is probably how they say it in like Britain or something.
Okay.
It's probably not wrong.
So you've heard that in church?
Colossians?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay. I'm just seeing if it's church real or if it's like not real at all.
I think it's church real, yeah.
Church real. Got
it. I mean, we know that like Chris Stroop told us that they pronounced Ehud. So, you know.
Yeah, I guess anything is up for grabs at that point.
Okay, now shut up, and I'm going to give you some fast facts.
You got it, baby.
That's the most important thing about facts, is that they be very rapid.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're accurate or not, you can take or leave it.
Yeah.
But they got
to be fast.
State
the facts and let God sort out the rest.
State them very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So, Colossians. It is another epistle or open letter by the Apostle Paul to the church in Colossae, a town, or actually a major city, in what is now Turkey. Like most of the New Testament, it was written in Koine Greek. If this is your first Sunday School Dropouts episode and you don't know anything about Paul, he's a strange little man who started off persecuting Christians as a member of the like Jewish upper class. And then he converted to Christianity and decided he was going to be in charge of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he went around founding churches all over the Roman Empire and writing letters to churches to scold them for disobeying him and listening to other Christians. And for some reason, those letters, which are called the Pauline Epistles, make up most of the New Testament. Still not clear why.
I am also not clear on that.
So this one is addressed to the church in Colossae, and it is trying to warn them away from what is called in biblical scholarship the Colossian heresy.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Doesn't that sound badass?
It does.
That sounds like a sci-fi novel.
Mm-hmm. It should be by Greg Bear, you know, or fucking one of those other dudes.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
I hate those.
Suddenly
other
I've been exposed. I'm a fake nerd.
Boy.
Yeah.
This epistle may not actually be by Paul, but like from what I could tell, people just really aren't sure. It seems like there's like good evidence on both sides.
All I got is the text to go on, and honestly, it could be 50-50 in
yeah,
my opinion.
I agree. From my amateur opinion, just having read a bunch of other Pauline epistles, I think you could go
We'll talk
way.
More about it. What else you got on that FF list?
Well, for this episode, unexpectedly, I had no idea this was coming, but for this episode, it would be...
Are you going to fire me again?
I can't go through this again. I have a wife and kids again. For this episode, it would be handy to know about Gnosticism.
Oh.
So I'm going to give you a little Gnostic primer in case you haven't heard our last few episodes, which were about Gnostic texts, the Gospel of Thomas and the Acts of Thomas. So basically, in the years after Jesus's death, a bunch of different branches of Christianity started. Eventually, one of those went out and became, you know, like the early Catholic Church.
Mm.
We call that one Proto-Orthodox.
Proto-Orthodox.
Proto-Orthodox, because it eventually became Orthodox. But one of these other branches, another really popular one that was always fighting with the Proto-Orthodox branch, was Gnosticism, spelled with a G-N, silent G like in gnat or gnarly.
Mm-hmm.
Gnosis is the Greek word for knowledge. They had what could be described as...
Opinions.
Opinions. They had a very weird belief system. They thought that there is a perfect, omnipotent, all-knowing God. But that God is not the one from the Old Testament. Rather, that God created all these, like, emanations or... eons, they're called, kind of roughly comparable to angels. One of these angel type beings foolishly created a horrible miscreant god named Yaltaboth that was so fucked up she kicked it out of heaven without telling anyone. Just sweep that one under the rug. I mean, who among us hasn't attempted to create a child through parthenogenesis and then disposed of the result? But that God...
So you're looking for sympathy in the room and you're not getting much.
Oh, like you've never done that. You just took care of all your monstrosities and fucked up creations.
Look, I'm working hard every day to put my monstrosities through college. Okay? I didn't abandon them like some sort of piece of shit fake dad, okay, over there.
This was a fake mom, Sophia.
Mm-hmm.
But so Yaltaboth, this fucked up mistake God... That's the one from the Old Testament. He's the one who created the earth. Yaltaboth thinks he's the one true God, but that's just because he's dumb. And that's why the world is so terrible and full of sin and suffering. It's because it was created by this inferior reject God. Jesus was sent from the real God to tell us the truth. And if we learn that secret truth, that secret knowledge or gnosis, then we can rejoin the real God in the real heaven, which is called the Pleroma, which is the Greek word for fullness, because everything up there is perfect and not broken like it is down here.
Well, the Jews get to go to, like, fake heaven because they follow a fake god. Is that right?
I'm not an expert, but I think that they just die.
Oh, I see. His promises mean nothing because he's like, not a real god. He just thinks he is.
I think so.
Okay, well, we don't have to speculate.
I mean, as I gave a disclaimer in previous episodes,
you were an expert on Gnosticism.
There were a lot of different types of Gnosticism over the years, and obviously I don't know that much about them. I've just, you know, read a little bit. So who knows? Different Gnostics probably had different ideas of what happened. Shall we start on Colossians?
Yeah, absolutely. So Colossians is structured like a standard Pauline epistle.
Yes.
Starts with a what's up, how are you, hope everybody is well.
And starts with, this is a letter from Paul and mm-hmm. Timothy.
Mm-hmm.
If Paul did write this,
mm-hmm.
it's likely that Timothy had a co-author credit. I know he's mentioned in some epistles, and sometimes it seems like he was part of writing them, sometimes it doesn't.
Sometimes it's like if a letter recipient was doing very well, they would be lucky to get a visit from Timothy. Like, we'll send you Timothy, and Timothy will carry the word with him. In this case, this one is written much more coherently and more concisely than most of the Pauline epistles. So you got to say, whoever the scribe was, if it's Timothy or if it's some rent-a-scribe down on the square, you know, the types that I'm talking about,
you know.
Then they...
But this was a good-ass rent-a-scribe, if it was one.
If it was one.
Also, this book uses about 50 words that Paul never uses in any other epistle.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. If the message and the structure is very familiar.
Yeah.
Which it is.
Yes.
The style of it is a little more refined, a little more, I don't know, metropolitan? Mm. A little more worldly than you might expect of a Pauline joint?
Could be. Could very well be.
Okay. But what's the point of this letter?
Well, the point is that he wants to warn them away from some false teachings.
Right. Which is what most of the letters are about.
Yes. So this one starts out by talking about something that I think of as extremely standard Christianity. I grew up being taught this, and I didn't really think twice about it. And that is that Jesus was not only present before creation, but also, quote, by him all things were created.
Mm.
And I always thought of this as another way of saying Jesus isn't just the Son of God, he also is God. And this
right.
is part of the Trinity.
Right.
He had to be present before creation because he is God. But here is something that I never noticed before that's in Colossians 1:19. Says, for God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him.
Mm.
The word for fullness in the original Greek is pleroma.
Oh.
AKA the word Gnostics use for heaven.
For the secret heaven.
For the secret heaven.
Mm-hmm. The super heaven.
So maybe part of the point of this passage is not just that, like, God and Jesus are also the same, but also to kind of refute the Gnostic creation story and be like, no, the earth wasn't created by a spiritual dumpster. It was created by and through Jesus. That's the real pleroma.
Got it. I also noticed in chapter one,
yes,
that Paul or whoever wrote this letter incorporated a little bit of that Gnostic mysticism to try to like steal their fire a little bit.
Yes.
For example, in 26, the mystery that has been kept hidden for ages and generations, but is now disclosed to the Lord's people.
Yes. Not just that, but the sentence before that, verse 25, is I have become the church's servant by the commission God gave to me to present to you the word of God in its fullness.
Oh, the mystery. So, this is very unusual for New Testament stuff.
Yes.
Because Paul has usually been selling stuff not on like a mystical, like mysterious
right.
tip, but saying, you know, there are very clear rules.
Yeah.
And you got to follow
and they're
them.
Totally obvious, even though I just made them up and they make no sense.
Yes. It's very simple. I have a twisted theological reasoning for all of this and it follows naturally. In this one, he's like, you got to get down with God and like the sweet mysteries that
yeah.
Jesus brought to us. And it's like, well, Paul, that sounds a little Gnostic.
It sounds like he's saying, you know, like, I got your secret knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I got it right here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not Yaltaboth.
Yeah. He's rapping with the kids right now.
Yeah.
You know, the kids are out there on the street and they got their own lingo. And Paul's like, hey, I'm hip with the kids.
But see,
I am keeping it 200 right now. I'm dope AF.
I'm straight fire.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with this is that if Paul wrote it, it has to be, you know, like before the year 100,
because
that's when he was alive. And like Gnosticism.
Unless.
as far as we know, Gnosticism didn't really exist yet. So.
But I have to feel like some of the concepts, and I don't know. I have no scholarly background in this at all.
I know. Well, so let's keep going. Chapter 2. He keeps using these Gnostic keywords and like phrases throughout. So
presumably for SEO purposes.
Probably. So like 2:2. My purpose is that they may be united in love so that they may have the full riches of complete understanding in order that they may know the mystery of God, namely Christ, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge.
That is a bunch of Gnostic dog whistles.
Yeah, and knowledge, I mean, the word for knowledge in Greek is gnosis, like he's using the word gnosis there. In 2:8-9, he warns the Colossians not to get deceived by false heretical teachings because, quote, in Christ, all the fullness of the deity lives in bodily form, and you have been given fullness in Christ, who is the head over every power and authority. Then he does go off on a small circumcision tangent, but is really riding the line here. Like, because it's just a small tangent, but it is a circumcision tangent. So
I'm
like, is this Paul? It could be, but I don't know.
See, this seems to me, so, and here's what he says. Your whole self, ruled by the flesh, was put off when you were circumcised by Christ, having been buried with him in baptism, in which you were also raised with him through your faith in the working of God who raised him from the dead. Now, this, to my mind, reminds me of some previous epistles where he was trying to defend the new church against people who were saying, you have to follow the Old Testament.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the name of that particular heresy was. But the problem that he had was that these churches that he had started had gotten like infiltrated by people who said, hey, I'm not sure if you heard this, but Christ was a Jew and he's
and
got all
we
these
gotta be like Jewish.
He's got all these extra books that you gotta read too.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? Extra books? Sign me up. Anyway, this is him trying to get around the earlier commandments, the earlier covenants by creating a spiritual circumcision.
Yes, which he's definitely done before.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes on in this chapter to say the same thing we've seen in other Pauline epistles, which is like, doesn't matter if you're circumcised or not. Doesn't matter if you follow dietary laws or not. Doesn't matter what holidays you celebrate. All that matters is believing in Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because he denounces asceticism, right? So we saw that asceticism was a big deal in Gnostic texts.
Mm.
Like in the Acts of Thomas, we saw like Thomas didn't even have to eat food, barely. And obviously it was extremely anti-sex.
Right.
You're not supposed to have sex ever.
It was pretty much anti-life.
Yeah, it was anti-life.
Yeah.
And asceticism has been a big deal in lots of different Christian traditions over the years. Like, that's not at all unique to Gnosticism. But so the rationale for it is usually we're living in this mortal world, but we're focusing on heaven. And so this mortal world, you know, we can punish our bodies, whatever. Our focus is dying, going to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
That takes different forms, you know, has different nuances in different traditions, but it's pretty widespread over the years. What's weird to me is that here Paul says, like, yeah, we're living for heaven. We're not living for this world. But that's why you shouldn't be ascetic. That's why you shouldn't focus on your dietary laws, your sex laws, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are ways of feeling holy, but they have nothing to do with actually believing in Jesus. It's weird. It seems paradoxical to me. Because he also, I mean, he's clearly not saying, like, enjoy your life and live like a normal life. Because he goes on to say, like, put to death whatever belongs to your earthly nature, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, greed, etc. But he also says religious rules, I like the way they're phrased here, do not handle, do not taste, do not touch. Those are just made up human laws that aren't really about God.
Mm-hmm.
They're just about feeling holy rather than actually being holy.
Yeah, but it's an impossible commandment to give.
I agree.
To say,
it seems paradoxical.
You know, you shouldn't be judged by what holy days you believe in or whether you're circumcised or not, but you should also be judged by these other relatively arbitrary things.
Yeah, that are all like the same
part of human life.
Well, and like those Jewish laws exist for the purpose of minimizing the occurrence of like sexual immorality, impurity, lust, mm-hmm. greed, etc. You mm-hmm. know, but then he's saying like, don't follow that stuff because that stuff's all man made. But like, follow it. You know,
right? Yeah, yeah. Like, that's a good point. Is that rules about, you know, marriage and diet and stuff are designed to avoid those very things, but he doesn't give any specific commandments about how to avoid impurity, let's say.
Yeah.
He just says, know that you don't have to necessarily follow every rule that you've ever heard.
Yeah, which is, like, not helpful. Which could be evidence in the not Paul column. Like, someone's like, I know Paul's against this stuff. I know he's against Jewish laws. I also know he's against impurity.
But has it ever stopped Paul before in the confirmed Paul stuff?
Absolutely not. So that's what, I don't know.
Yeah.
He says to do, you know, all the good stuff instead. Compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience. He says the most important thing is love. That's very Paul.
Mm-hmm.
There's this passage here. Wives, obey your husbands.
Children. Oh, you mean instructions for Christian households?
I do mean that, those very instructions.
Mm-hmm.
Wives, obey your husbands. Children, obey your parents. Slaves, obey your masters. And we saw this in the book of Ephesians, but Ephesians is not actually written by Paul. So, question mark, question mark, question mark.
So I want to point out two things about this passage. First of all, there was another line that you didn't read there. Fathers, do not embitter your children or they will become discouraged.
Yeah, I mean, it says like, husbands need to treat their wives well, parents, their children, and masters, their slaves.
Right. Yeah, as if they're all the same thing.
Right.
I just think the idea of children becoming discouraged.
Aw.
That's sad.
It's just sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, aw.
So don't embitter them, if possible.
He's not like, they're all demons anyway.
Yeah.
So at least there's that. It's a step up from the Acts of Thomas.
But the passage on slaves specifically deserves special mention, in my opinion. Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it not only when their eye is on you and to curry their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Anyone who does wrong will be repaid for their wrongs, and there is no favoritism. Now that is a passage that is positioning Christianity as the religion of slaves and the religion of the underclass.
Yeah, it is and it isn't at the same time. I think that's a paradox that is unintentionally at the heart of Christianity. But I think we're getting a little bit out of our depth here.
I agree.
Let's finish the book and then we'll get back to this.
Okay, well, the book finishes like many classic Pauline epistles do.
Yes.
With a list of shout-outs.
Yeah, yes. So basically Paul's like, I'm going to send my buddies over to teach you the truth. His buddies always have some amazing names.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, we have Tychicus, Aristarchus, and Jesus, who is called Justus,
mm-hmm.
because otherwise it would get confusing.
Agreed. He also includes the note, tell Archippus, see to it that you complete the ministry you have received in the Lord. Just a little note to Archippus that, remember,
get the form's done.
If you slack, you'll be in the Bible.
Would you like to hear the top three footnotes from my NIV study Bible?
I would love
Bible?
To hear the top three footnotes.
All right, we're going
to
count them down. Number okay. three.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the quote from the Pauline, from the actual Bible book. Do not let anyone who delights in false humility and the worship of angels disqualify you for the prize, prize being heaven. And there's a footnote on the word disqualify that says, this term pictures an umpire or referee who excludes from competition any athlete who fails to follow the rules.
What a fucking waste of everybody's time that was.
That was like from the boys' Bible.
Yeah.
Number two, when Paul's talking about spreading the gospel, he says, let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone.
Yummy.
Footnote says, salt is a preservative and is tasty.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Bible.
It's tasty.
I didn't know.
Salt is tasty.
I didn't know it was so tasty.
And here's number one quote from the NIV Study Bible footnotes. When Paul says slaves should obey their masters and masters should be kind to their slaves, the footnote says, Paul neither condones slavery nor sanctions revolt against masters. Rather, he calls on both slaves and masters to show Christian principles in their relationship and thus to attempt to change the institution from within.
Well, I mean, he does the first thing, but he doesn't do the second.
Change the institution of slavery from within. We can keep the institution of slavery.
But let's make it...
We just need to reform it.
We just need a more Christian
way
slavery.
Of owning humans. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We can, that's what Paul did.
I mean, strange...
I'm writing this in probably fucking 1995, mm-hmm. and I'm like, yeah, we can do it. We can reform the institution of slavery. Paul says so.
Strangely, I mean, Christianity, like based on this text at least, was designed at least partially to operate within that spectrum.
Yeah, I guess so.
He's like, hey, this is a religion for everybody, slaves and masters.
That's fucked up. Slaves and masters can't have the same religion.
I kind of agree. I don't know what it is about it, but it doesn't seem like anyone...
It just doesn't seem right.
It doesn't seem like it could fit both scenarios.
So, do you think that this is Paul?
I think it's a really good interpolation of Paul's ideas designed to be sold to a different audience. This is designed for a different demo than most of the epistles are.
This is a demo that seems to be into Gnosticism.
Agreed.
But
in the same way that he wrote letters to people that were experimenting with Old Testament shit,
yeah.
He's writing a letter here to somebody that's, or to a group that's experimenting with Gnosticism, although he may not have written it. It may just been like, this is how Paul does it, is he refutes their arguments bit by bit.
Like, you could totally see the proto-Orthodox church, some you know, prominent church father somewhere mm-hmm. being like, okay, we got to shut Gnosticism down, because that was extremely important to early proto-Orthodox church fathers. Mm-hmm. They wrote tons of shit about Gnosticism and other heresies. And you could see them being like, okay, well, how are we going to, you know, definitively say that Gnosticism is bad? We got to have Paul do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could see that happening.
Agreed.
But at the same time, this does sound like Paul.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure how important it is.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, if I don't believe in God, and you don't believe in Jesus, and I think Paul's an asshole, why do I care if it's Paul or not?
You asking me? I don't know.
I don't know either.
I mean, it's of minor historical interest, but again, we're not academics, and this is not our field. We're just idiots who bloviate weekly.
For your entertainment. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of entertainment, I think you might find this next segment extremely entertaining because we're about to take a break and then we'll come back with something truly remarkable.
Yep.
It's a horoscope for one of our good friends and fellows.
A good boy.
A certain man you may recognize from his outsized impact on life.
Western civilization.
Anyway, you'll never guess who it is, but we got a professional horoscope for him coming up. You're going to hear a little bit of music, and then we'll be right back with more Sunday School Dropouts.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you. Welcome back to Sunday School Dropouts. My name is Nico.
And I'm Lauren.
And we were talking about the book of Colossians.
And we will come back to it, but we're going to take a little detour right now. Because we have on the phone with us my dear friend, Luke Danny Blue. She is an amazing writer. She's working on a fucking kick-ass novel right now. And she's also an astrologer at Sea Goat Astrology. And so we decided to give her a call and see what Jesus's horoscope says.
Yeah, we can read the man's words. We can read about his actions. We can see his outsized influence in society at large.
We got to get the truth from the stars.
Mm-hmm.
Luke, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
So we should start off by saying that for Jesus's birth date, we are using December 25th in the year zero.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided it's, you know, it's sometime after dark, but it can't be that late because the nearby shepherds have to get there. So we said it's about 9 p.m. This is obviously not Jesus' actual birth date, but we're going to pretend that it is. Mm-hmm. And we're going to learn about his chart.
Yeah. So okay, what do you got for us, Luke?
Well, we actually do have a slight problem, which is that my program is only going to let me do 1 BC. Or I could possibly
1 AD.
Let me see what happens if I put it in with BC.
There's no zero, right? Because, I mean...
Yeah, there's no zero.
There's no year zero.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
It's one.
Exactly.
He was born in
one. So do we want 1 AD or 1 BC?
Well, 1 BC is slightly more historically accurate, probably.
Okay, so let's do that. Yeah, I mean, it's all bullshit anyway, but let's, like, you know, pretend that we care.
Yes.
I mean, it's Jesus. Come on. Give the guy some credit.
It's high stakes, yeah.
I mean, I've never met him personally, but...
Well, you know, but now you're going to feel like you have.
Okay.
You've never met him personally? You haven't accepted him in your heart?
He's never asked.
Baby, he asks every day.
Mm. But he's like a vampire, right? He's like a Dracula where...
You have to let him in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have to say the more. You have to say the word.
But I guess, but you know, in this case, well, I guess the cross did kind of kill him, so that fits too.
Mm-hmm. Nice!
Maybe the
we drink his here. Blood instead of the other way around.
He's a reverse vampire.
Reverse vampire.
Okay. So you guys want to hear about Jesus?
We'd love to.
Okay. So just
all
to
we do.
Just to confirm here, I'm using the birth date December 25th of 1 BC at 12 p.m. in Bethlehem, and I'm just using 12 p.m. as a birth time because that makes things approximately correct for this completely made up astrology chart that we're looking at.
Perfect.
Sounds great.
arguably, this might be a good, we'll find out if this is a good picture of what, of the story that we tell about Jesus, because sometimes that's how astrology works. It's like if you do a chart for something fictional, it becomes like, it's almost like it describes the story itself. So we'll see. All right. Jesus by this totally whack birthday is a Capricorn, which I'm going to tell you, I have some serious reservations about.
We'll
Jesus
get to that in
Capricorn.
A second. We'll get to it in
okay.
a second.
So your sun represents your sense of purpose, motivation, and identity. So this would basically mean that Jesus's identity was all wrapped up in basically his duties to the collective, his duties and obligations to the collective. Generally speaking, Capricorns are people who take their work really seriously. Importantly, Capricorns like to get paid for their work, although we do have examples of, like, you know, the most famous Capricorn activist example is Martin Luther King Jr. But I feel like, did he get paid for, I feel like he got paid for it because he was like, you know, like he was like a preacher, you know, so
well,
it was kind of his job.
He made a living, I think, but he didn't get rich.
Well, no, obviously he didn't get rich, but Capricorns don't really care about getting rich. We just want to get our bills paid. I should say I'm a Capricorn. Capricorns are generally super emotionally sensitive, tend to be a pretty empathetic sign, but are huge emotional repressors. So like, you know, basically feel like I would not be doing my duty to society if I were to get all emo right now.
So like, would you say that if someone were to say, you shouldn't even feel anger, that's as bad as murder, or you shouldn't even feel lust, that's as bad as adultery. Would that be typical of a Capricorn?
I don't know, because I feel like a Capricorn would be more like, it doesn't matter if you feel anger, it doesn't matter if you feel lust. Capricorns are kind of like, are more like, we just don't concern ourselves with emotions. They're not important. So maybe, but we can look at, I'm kind of like, I'm looking here to see where Jesus' Neptune is, because that'll sort of talk about like self-denying tendencies. I'm not really seeing that in this chart. There is a square from Neptune or from Venus to Neptune, and there's a square from Uranus to Neptune, but neither of those would necessarily give that kind of like don't feel anger, don't feel lust, or whatever.
Well, Neptune, the Roman god of the sea, and of course. There would naturally be some conflict between the risen Christ and, you know, one of the...
and a pagan idol.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would say I would expect to see a way stronger Neptune in the chart of Jesus, because Neptune is all about for the principle of self-sacrifice. It's also the planet that rules spirituality. And it creates this kind of tortured state of like... depending on where it is in the chart, but like in some small way for everyone, it's like that sort of seed of like, how can I bear to both be in a body and also like be able to feel connected to something bigger than myself? So it's
an important question for Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Neptune is a very Christian planet. So it's important in the story of Christianity. I would expect to see, he's got a reasonably strong Venus, but it's just not crazy strong. I would expect to see an aspect between Sun and Neptune, which would give a more sort of like a bigger identity crisis around like, how can I take up space as a person and also like give of myself to something larger? Anyway, I'll tell you guys about his moon sign. You want to know about his moon sign?
Yeah.
Yes.
So what is a moon sign?
So the sun is like, you can think of it like your daylight self. It's your core sense of identity. It's what gives you your sense of purpose and motivation. It's the part of yourself that you want to be seen for. And so anyone in our day-to-day life is going to know us from our sun sign. Our moon sign is much more private. So only those people closest to us, maybe your Mary Magdalene, is going to know you by your moon sign. Also like parents, like your own mother and any children you play kind of a maternal role with. Likewise, any other adults who played a maternal role with you. And our moon describes how we process emotions. So this would give us some more information about like whether he was like super like don't have bad feelings. His moon was in Taurus with this birth time, which basically would make him someone who has very deep, strong emotions, but tends to get kind of like blocked up, like sort of emotionally constipated.
I have a Taurus moon, don't I?
Yeah, you do have a Taurus moon. Yeah. I mean, right now, Lauren, you and I have a lot in common with Jesus. So Taurus moon people are pretty uncomfortable with change. Sometimes Taurus moon people are kind of self-denying around sensory pleasures, but even so, they're usually kind of like closet eaters or like closet self-indulgers.
Jesus does get criticism from the Pharisees for drinking wine all the time.
Mm-hmm. Does
and he?
He
is he commits is a strong word. I would say he creates several party miracles,
such as making water into wine,
mm-hmm.
such as multiplying food.
Mm-hmm. But it's not for him; it's for his friends.
Yeah, see, that's the thing is Taurus is like a self-interested sign. I just don't see him. You know, I mean, maybe like he would multiply food for himself and his lover or for his family. Also, moon and Taurus people are really connected to their families of origin, whether or not they love those, like whether or not they love to be connected to those families. They're very, very tied up with their family of origin. And usually, not for all Taurus moon people, but usually the family of origin is the people they're closest to. But even if not, they tend to get like sucked into like family drama because they have a really strong kind of root system.
Jesus's father is God, mm-hmm. so that's the ultimate family connection.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. Other thing about moon and Taurus people, they have really strong core values, and their emotions really affect, like, their emotions affect their values, and their values really affect their emotions. So that would fit, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are both check marks.
like basically when you get the combination, so both Capricorn and Taurus are earth signs. When you get that combination, you're going to get someone who is not especially emotionally expressive. And you know, I'm going to shorthand it because you guys don't want to hear all this stuff, but the rest of the chart, there's no real emotion happening here. There's definitely some passion for sure.
The passion of the Christ.
Yeah, definitely. And there's conviction. I mean, Capricorn is
when he was convicted for treason against the Roman Empire. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's intensity. There's like super intense desire, real intense, powerful needs for control, a basic sense of self-acceptance that makes some of the harder parts of his life a little bit easier. So, you know, maybe when he's up there on the cross, he's just kind of like, you know, Jesus, it's been a good run.
Doesn't he say, LOI, LOI, why have you forsaken me?
He does say, my God, why have you forsaken me? But before that, he does pray, you know, if we could not do this, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. But if we got to, then we got to.
Yeah, I mean, and it would basically be sort of like, maybe he wouldn't be okay with the situation, but he'd be okay with himself in the situation. Like, he's not going to be blaming himself at the end of the day.
That's true. He does not do that.
I mean, there's certainly, like, a lot of faith in this chart, and a real need to act around faith because we've got a strong Mars-Jupiter opposition. Mars is the principle of action. Jupiter is the principle of faith. He's a truth teller, but he doesn't mince words.
That's very Jesus.
Very strongly identified with his words. Kind of like perhaps a little bit of an impulsive talker. And also, like, he probably has kind of a fat head, but in a sort of savior way. I mean, that part fits for sure, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
His head was fat.
Could barely fit the crown of thorns on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and his Mars is in Aries, which is, like, fast, decisive action, often coming to the defense of an underdog. But also kind of selfish action, like, or self-centered action, like, acting based on what he thinks is right when he thinks it's right.
Sure, when he stopped the stoning and asked, you know, who among you could cast the first stone, or something along those lines.
But who is without sin cast the first stone.
There we go. Certainly he did it to protect someone, but it was also a very convenient way to drop a stealth sermon on some people in the street.
And establish his moral authority over the Pharisees.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is for sure the chart of an extremely calculating person who controls his image. Like with like iron, like an iron fisted control of his image, because he's got a super strong Pluto in here.
What do you think Jesus's actual sign would be?
Yeah, tell me about Jesus, because I have like the like kind of secular Jews, like I have like flipped through the channels during the 700 Club, and once I went to like mega church as research. That's my background with Christianity. That's all I know about Jesus.
Okay. So he's definitely, he says he's the Messiah. He says he's the Son of God.
Yes.
So he's not really humble.
No.
He does like wash the disciples' feet. And so that's sort of a humbling gesture. But overall, definitely not humble.
He is extremely driven, I would say. Based on the text that we have, every moment of his life is dedicated to achieving his goals.
Okay.
Which is creating this ministry before the time comes that he has to die for everybody's sins.
Yeah, and he says over and over that like the end of the world is near. So he's very apocalyptic. But he says the two most important things are loving God and loving your neighbors. And his main thing is like radical forgiveness and giving all your money to the poor. Those are like his highest values.
I would say he's an extremely charismatic person, even to the point of cultivating a cult of personality around himself. Like he has like a close inner circle of people that trust him absolutely.
But he's also, he's obviously very loving, but he's also really sarcastic mm-hmm. and gets fed up with the disciples being dumb a lot.
Is he like is he loving like up close and personal, or is he loving like is he loving like I love you, Lauren, or is he loving like I love all 700 people who are crowded in this clearing with me?
It's more like the second, but he does display it in like one-on-one interactions, like healing somebody's sickness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But with the people that are closest to him, the apostles, disciples. Yeah. He is generally not that giving. He's constantly trying to teach them and is upset with them when they don't learn fast as he expects.
Yeah.
God, you guys sound like you're talking about a Sagittarius, honestly.
Nico's a Sagittarius.
Yeah. I mean, I'm willing to give him to you, Nico.
Because, it's all starting to make sense.
Because here's like Sagittarius is the sign of the teacher and the preacher. It's ruled by Jupiter, which in classical astrology, which was the astrology of Jesus' day, was the like primary spiritual planet was Jupiter.
Oh, nice. That would be the astrology that Jesus and all Jews said was idolatry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That would be, that they like kind of tossed down or whatever. Although there is like Jewish, like old Jewish astrology. I don't know exactly when it dates from, but. So, yeah, I mean, Sagittarians are like, they are pretty like, I don't know. It's funny. They're kind of like, they're a sign that has the capacity to be very joyful, but they're so intensely meaning driven. And they are so like connected to their like love of humanity that they often like have crises of faith, I guess, where they then feel like super depressed and angry. Because people don't live up to what they expect of them. Sagittarius is a fire sign, and fire signs are inherently egotistical, I guess.
A clever man named Frankenstein once said, fire bad.
Well, you know, fire's really creative. Fire gets shit done, or at least gets stuff started. It does kind of burn out, although I will say I think Sagittarius is one of the signs most like able to commit to like activist projects, because if they're connected to something that gives them a sense of meaning, they'll pretty much do anything for it. It's the sign that's classically associated with like kind of going up to the mountain and getting the truth. So kind of like it's Moses-y in that sense, like go up and get the tablets or whatever.
Jesus goes up on the mountain and sees Moses's ghost, by the way.
It's true.
That's a very Sagittarian thing to do. I mean, I'm going to say if he wasn't a Sagittarius sun sign, he probably had a really strong Jupiter or Sagittarius very strong on his chart. But, you know, you still get a December birthday out of him if you want, if mm-hmm. he's a Sagittarius.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Because, like, up until, like, I don't know, like December 22nd, we're in Sagittarius. Ooh. So, yeah. I mean, even though we know that the birthday is like absolutely made up, maybe there's some truth in it.
maybe.
But yeah.
Awesome. Well,
I think we did a lot of great work there.
Yeah, we discovered that Jesus's true birthday is mm-hmm. actually December 22nd.
Yeah, it's probably like December 22nd.
Proof positive. All right, so Luke, where can people find you and your work? And if they want to get an astrology reading from you, where can they go for that?
Well, they can go to seagoatastrology.com, and it's seagoat like the ocean, S-E-A, goat, astrology. And I also have a Facebook page that has a lot of like fun astrology stuff on it all the time. You can amaze your friends. And also relevant.
Yeah, there's lots of posts that are like,
what if I hate my friends?
No, it's like, why? You shouldn't date an Aries or
exactly,
whatever. And
exactly.
They're all amazing. And the Libra ones are very mean to me.
They're mostly like, I feel like I specialize in revenge on your exes. Like, that's like my niche. but not actually in my, like, if you get a reading from me. But I will say this is a good moment to plug the fact that I'm going to be doing actually some readings that I don't make any money off of, but where the proceeds are going to go to help either like organizations specifically focused on people of color, helping people of color in Houston, or on like helping trans people in Houston recover from the flood. And they're going to be like activism focused reading. So like kind of like figuring out like what you can do, even if you don't think of yourself as an activist, and how you can avoid burnout and stuff like that. And they're like $15. Awesome. So I haven't started them yet, but they're going to be up on my site the first week of September.
All right. Thanks so much for talking to us. And I will see you on the internet.
Awesome.
Thanks, Luke.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that means there's only one thing left to do.
And that's to rate this book. How would you rate this book, the book of the big boys, the Colossians?
The Colossi.
Mm-hmm.
The book itself, I'm going to give like 2 out of 6 Jesuses called justices.
Okay.
Because, I don't know, there's some interesting parts, but they're all interesting in a meta way.
Mm.
They're all interesting in that, like, first of all, it really seems like they're talking about Gnosticism here.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea that that was... like,
and we just may have that G juice on the brain.
I know. But then that's the other thing, right? Is that I'm like, maybe I'm just like fucking Gnostic paranoid now. Like, maybe I'm just like, everything is a secret message. But I mean, it's using all these keywords, and it talks about, oh, like these people who worship angels. That certainly seems to be like talking about all the weird eons and stuff and emanations. And so I think it's interesting that...
or it could be talking about, like, you know, Kabbalah.
Jewish angels.
It could. Jewish mysticism and stuff.
It could. And, I mean, the dietary laws seem to be more Jewish than Gnostic. We don't know about any Gnostic dietary laws, but who fucking knows? We don't know that much about Gnosticism. We hardly knew anything until...
that was their big mistake. By emphasizing...
the secret part.
The secret part. You're, like, hamstringing your own movement.
Yeah. So... I don't know. That's interesting. It's an interesting glimpse into history that way. I can't really tell if it's Paul or not. And it kind of sucks that, like, wives and slaves should be submissive. You know?
Totally agreed. 6 out of 30 discouraged children.
Wow.
For me.
Aw, they're so sad.
And there's so many of them.
Wrap it up, please.
But mainly because the text as it is, like you said, besides the meta part of it, where we're like, Gnostic or not, Paul or not,
mm-hmm.
like those are interesting questions, but they don't really have anything to do with the text or its impact, on its surface level is like, hey, God died for us. It's Christianity.
Hey, guys, you know about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
I like
it's
it.
Me, it's... Paul.
But the only part where it actually makes any statements is in the part where it says that basically wives obey husbands,
mm-hmm.
children obey fathers,
mm-hmm.
slaves obey masters, as if they're all sort of the same thing. And, you know, I can't get down with that. That's
also...
simply not a humanist viewpoint, if you ask me.
Also, the thing about, like, you can't be ascetic, but also you have to be ascetic. It's
it's very arbitrary and stupid, but we've seen that before in Paul.
Yeah. I feel like it's the most unclear here, though, that we've ever seen it.
That's because they're mixing up the language.
Yeah.
If they kept the language to this, the sort of default Paul, you know, which is like plain with a shade of Old Testament authenticity sprinkled on top. You know,
a very thin sliver of that.
Mm-hmm.
One metaphor per book.
Yeah.
One moment of poetry per epistle.
Right. Which he does allow himself and usually excels at, to be honest.
I'm clicking at you, baby.
In the longer epistles, there are these moments that are like the most quoted parts of the Bible.
Yeah, that's
always
true.
In these long epistles buried somewhere. Unrelated to the probably horrible things that he's saying elsewhere
in
the
book.
Yeah,
that's true.
But, you know, he drops a couple zingers in there.
Yeah, like babies being tossed about on the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Salty little babies.
Oh, they're so
discouraged,
salty.
Salty little babies.
I'm so sad.
But salt is tasty, and it's a preservative.
That's what I've heard. Anyway, that will do it for the book portion of tonight's show, but we still have a bag portion.
Bag.
bag.
What type of bag are we working with this week, my dear?
Well, we got an email from a listener named Peter. It was a very lovely email, including pictures of the crucifixion as depicted in the Cathedral of St. Asaph or Asaph in North Wales.
A-S-A-P-H, if you want to look it up.
It's made from local material, he says, i.e. bones from dead sheep, wood from broken trees. Very unique and unlike any other crucifix I've ever seen. Nico, how would you describe the pictures that he sent us?
It's a ghoulish representation.
It's a White Walker.
Possible Zombor situation.
Just up on the wall of a church.
It looks.
It's horrifying.
Like a decomposed or a mummified human.
With giant sheep hips.
It's very realistic, at least from the distance that the photo is.
I mean, realistic in terms of, like, if you live in fucking Tim Burton's nightmares. It's not, like, proportionally human. The arms are very long. The head is very sunken.
I agree, but the overall effect of a decomposing mumsor or mumsy situation is then effective.
And then below that in the photo, there's just like these very normal like posters. They're like, St. Asaph Cathedral Choir. And it's just like, yeah, this is a normal church. Yeah, so what? We have a fucking possessed zombie on the wall that we worship. Whatever. It's
and
a nice church.
My problem was,
well, here's a nice boy in a red collar and he's singing.
My problem was, somebody at some point in this church community encouraged whoever made this awful, awful thing. And they, instead of saying, when somebody tells you, I want to make a new crucifix for the church, I'm going to make it out of sheep bones and wood.
From
and
broken trees.
Going to look like a total mumsar. And then instead of being like, don't do that. Nobody wants to see a mumsar.
No, they should have said, that's very nice, Joe. Please keep that in your house. Please don't bring that to us.
Yeah. Instead, they put it on the church and just left it there forever,
and
I guess.
Just put it next to the nice posters of little boys and girls trying to sing.
And now everybody has to claim to be proud of this awful mumsar that
it's
they have in their
amazing
fucking church.
It's a zombie. It's amazing. Everyone Google St. Asaph, North Wales, Jesus zombie.
It actually reminds me of when I was in Czech Republic, I visited a very famous ossuary. It's a bone church.
A bone yard.
Mm-hmm. And it was made by monks, if I'm not mistaken. And there were all kinds of altars and worship materials and everything made from bones. Human bones.
I don't like that.
And in fact, there was a very famous chandelier there as well.
A chandelier.
That supposedly incorporated every single bone in the human body.
That's fucked up.
And
it's so fucked.
It was all ostensibly Christian. And I was just like, y'all are getting off on death in a weird way.
In a weird way.
And I don't know what this has to do with anything. I mean, it's like amazing to worship death in such a crazy way. But like, I'm not sure.
But also don't.
But also kind of don't.
But also I veto that.
Mm-hmm. Our listener Matt wrote in about our episode on the Gnostic Gospel of Thomas. He said, of course, you likely have heard of the most famous eon, Eon Flux. Of course I have. But did you remember that at one point in the show, she literally shoots the demiurge into space? No, I didn't remember that. Because that is the kind of show that you see very late at night. And you always half remember all the details. Because
I have no idea what this is.
Oh, really?
I mean, I know that Charlize Theron is
in a much maligned remake of the
I didn't know
the show.
I didn't know it was a show.
Oh yeah. It was a show and a comic. It was
an anime?
Sort of.
Was it an anime?
It was not an anime. It was an animated show.
Oh.
It was on very late at night on MTV at the moment when I consumed it.
Uh-huh.
And it was the kind of thing that you would see in sort of like a sleep deprived daze. And then
I consume literally everything in a sleep deprived days.
But it was at a time, you know, slightly before the internet before you could see strange, like, Adult Swim things online.
Okay.
Or you might have had less experience with bizarre found video or...
Okay.
And there was just...
like, nobody knew who Charlize Theron was. Breakout internet star Charlize Theron.
You're leaning hard on the Charlize Theron thing, but she was not involved with this. As far as I know, there were no South Africans involved in this production.
Great.
Anyway, it was a very strange animated show where the main character died every episode.
What?
It was very, very graphic and
then shot
Yelzeboth
into space?
Yeah.
Great. Done. Matt also wrote, the 2000s era film Stigma features an atheist possessed by a priest who wants people to know about the Gospel of Thomas, and some of the same lines you use in the episode are quoted in the film. Apparently the ghost didn't accept current consensus on its authenticity. Matt, I love you. I love you so much. I have no idea what you're talking about. Do you know what this is, Nico?
Nope. I also don't know what this is about.
Charlize Theron in this one?
Possibly.
How many South Africans are involved in the 2000s era film Stigma?
It could be literally dozens. We'll never know. But that is the end of tonight's episode of Sunday School Dropouts. I'm sorry that that's such a downer at the end.
Listen, Matt, I love you. I have no idea what you're talking about.
You can follow us on Twitter at SunSchoolDrop.
You can follow me on Twitter at Lauren E. O'Neill, spelled with an A, not an I.
If you have letters to send us, suggestions or questions, or pets or animals otherwise that you want us to bless, you can do so.
Or curse.
By emailing us at contact@sundayschooldropouts.lol.
That is contact@sundayschooldropouts.lol. Do not go to sundayschooldropouts.com. It's a terrible place full of terrible people.
If you want to find out more about the original music or follow whatever I'm doing, you can check me out at my website.
It's website.
NikoBakulich.com. NikoBakulich.com.
We, as always, thank Elise Carlton for our beautiful logo.
And I want to thank Lauren for being adorable tonight and doing her absolute best.
I got glasses, but I don't need them. I'm confused about my glasses. Anyway, I also thank Nico for sound engineering, editing, and original music.
You're welcome, my dear. We will see you next week on Sunday School Dropouts. I hope you have a wonderful time. We're proud of you every day that you get up and do what you got to do.
You're doing fucking awesome.
Bye.
Bye.
Time inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.